This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. It's 12:11. Hi, it's John Williams. We are here until 1 o'clock, noon to 1, the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. If you have a question, a comment, an observation, you can text it in 312-981-7200. Orion Samuelson follows agribusiness, of course. And, oh, I'm looking at another story. Farmers destroy crops that were grown for restaurants and hotels. They're talking about a lot of businesses, farms in Florida. I guess that's not impacting Illinois farmers just yet, huh?
Not yet, no, because it's too early in the crop year, but it is affecting farmers in California and Arizona and down in the Gulf states and, of course, Florida, where much of our green produce comes from this time of the year, and they just don't have a market for it.
I guess I hadn't thought about that. I mean, it's, on the one hand, a fortunate surplus, but they said, okay, at least in the story I'm reading, Orion, why don't y'all donate it to food banks? And they said, we have and we will, but it costs money to harvest the food. Who pays for that? If it's donated, then they're not making any money. And at some point, they literally just can't afford to donate the food to food banks.
Because at this point, John, they have so much invested in the crop, the seed, the tillage of the soil, the fertilizer, the crop protection products that they have to apply in order to get safe and good produce to the market. So it's not that simple because you can't store it. It's going to spoil. And I was just reading a dairy story from a good friend of mine in Wisconsin, John Onken, who wrote a story that he sent to me with the headline, Dairying, What's Next? Because dairy farmers can't keep the milk, and so they're dumping it because they've invested so much money to produce it already, money and labor and goods to get it done, that they can't sell it. And I think, as I mentioned in our last visit together, because this was something I didn't know, the biggest buyer of fluid milk in the United States is the National School Lunch Program.
Yeah.
And, of course, schools are shut down, and so those buyers just aren't out there.
And then you snap your fingers and say, okay, freeze that milk. We used to freeze milk in a freezer when I was a kid, but I guess you need vast amounts of freezer space, and there's costs associated with that too, right?
A lot of costs because you have the shipping costs, you have the milk truck that comes to the farm to pick it up, and some very expensive equipment to keep the milk refrigerated till it gets to where it should go. And that's the case with every crop. You've already got a lot invested in it. For example, the crops that we'll be planting here in the Midwest in 2 or 3 weeks if we get something besides snowstorms. But already the farmer has invested the money for the seed, which is not cheap because the research to develop the new seeds that have enabled us to use a lot less land to produce the crops that we need, but that money has already been invested, and you can't shut down a cow milking operation or a produce operation like you can an automobile factory line. You just can't shut it down.
Well, then you and I need to have another conversation down the road about what's going to happen with beans and corn, staple crops in this area, as well as other things the farmers are providing.
Well, because it's the whole chain with the milk consumption down, we're still buying meat and meat products, but how long can you produce those products at no income? And it's going to be a very interesting crop year because we had such a bad one last year at planting time with the floods and the rains, and now we're talking about snow, although that's not the first snow I've seen in April. But anyway, besides the pandemic, the questions of market and prices and weather and everything else is something that the producers, regardless of what the crop is or what the livestock animals are, you still have to invest in it because you can't shut it down.
More agribusiness news coming from Orion later in this report. Thank you, O.
You bet. Thank you.
Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET News, a regular guest here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with a lot of fascinating stories today. As always, I'd say. Ian, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Everybody's laying people off, and Amazon is the outlier. They're hiring how many more people?
They are hiring a bunch of people. It's really fascinating to see them doing this. And we're talking about tens of thousands here. It's part of it, apparently, is just that they can't keep up with the demand. I mean, we're talking about, they did an earlier hiring blitz of 100,000 people. Now we're getting an extra 75,000 just in response to the coronavirus. It seems as though this idea of delivering to my door and doing the order online, already a popular thing, is really just becoming much more popular in the face of this crisis, which a lot of us would have assumed, but we weren't really getting much detail until recently.
Previously, they gave everybody a raise in the company, too, and in their allied companies. Are these people going to get that wage? What are they going to work for?
You know, we're going to have to find out some of those details as they go. The thing that I think a lot of people are going to be looking for is to see how Amazon handles these people over time. Because if this is just a kind of during the holidays type thing where retailers kick up their employee base and then after the holidays lay them all off, that's going to be really frustrating to watch, particularly if we end up in a situation where we're in serious unemployment, where it appears we're already getting close to that, but even worse. So we'll see how this plays out. Also, I'm going to be looking for how companies like Walmart and Target and other ones that have been really chasing Amazon do and how they compete, because both Target and Walmart have gotten pretty good at using their stores as shipping hubs and getting used to being able to move things around and ship things to customers. Now, with the coronavirus really settling in, I think there's a real question of whether or not they're going to follow Amazon's lead.
Yeah, well, an article at CNET.com mentions that they would spend $350 million. They've updated that number to $500 million in payroll. So that's a lot of money not coming from
not
the government. And not coming from and coming from the private sector back into people's pockets. There is a distribution center in the Chicago area, so Amazon is hiring. Apple wants to add COVID-19 testing locations to maps. The same way I see a gas station, there'd be an icon for COVID-19?
Essentially, yeah. We have a picture of it on CNET, and that's basically what you can think of it as, is that you kind of see the testing center as a little icon on the map. This is not the only people doing it, by the way. We've got Google is working on a similar thing. There is a bunch of people who are starting to do this, I think, because they realize that people really need to be able to figure this out. And again, thinking about the long term, if we need to go in for regular testing, or at least some testing to figure out whether or not we have immunity, and eventually when they have a test to figure out whether or not we've had it and we have the antibodies, we're going to need to use these testing sites potentially quite often. So it's smart of them, I think, to start including this information in their apps, even if right now we can't really use them unless we get a doctor's note.
Ian, if that were the case, would it automatically refresh onto my Maps app, or would I have to delete and reload the Maps application?
I mean, that's the best part about most of these map apps, is that they're all automated. You know, there's not very much information on your phone to begin with. Google does offer a way to do offline maps, but otherwise almost all of them are actually pulling all that information from Apple and Google and Waze's servers as you're looking for it. So if they have new stuff to add in there, they just poof, they put it in.
Yeah.
And that's also, by the way, how they handle stuff like whether or not something's open, or whether or not I noticed in my Google map recently that a UPS center was designated as an essential business, and it actually said that in my Google map setting. So stuff like that is happening, I think, all over the place, partially because they're able to update this stuff in real time.
So would that work for, would I see that on my Apple phone? Would it be iOS? Would it be Droid and Apple as well?
Well, Apple Maps is only on Apple, unfortunately.
Right.
or fortunately, depending on where you sit politically on that one. But Google obviously is available on both Droids and Apples, as is Waze. So essentially, if you've got a modern phone, yeah, a lot of this stuff is starting to come on there. You know, Apple's doing this and making a big deal about it, but, you know, you can expect it to come to Google pretty soon, too.
New York taps Google to make filing for unemployment a little easier. What are they going to do about that?
Yeah, so you may have heard that as people are trying to file for unemployment, they're having a heck of a time. A lot of the phone systems are overwhelmed. A lot of the websites don't work. So what's happening is that the government, as it often does, is turning to the tech industry to fix it. And Google is going to work along with Verizon and the consultants at Deloitte to help New York improve its online and phone-based unemployment insurance application systems. We'll see how this plays out. Oftentimes, this is much more complex than people think. And if you remember back to looking at stuff like how the Obamacare exchanges opened up, right? You remember when that all started? It was really rough, and the websites didn't work very well. And that a part of that is really that it's very hard to build stuff that millions of people are going to use every day. So, and to build it from zero, or even worse, build it from pretty bad, which is what a lot of the anecdotal reporting on this is that these systems have been neglected for years. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do, but I imagine it won't be quick.
Sean Kane at CNET writes, the United States Senate told members to avoid using Zoom for remote work during the coronavirus lockdown because of security issues. Is that because of the Zoom bombing where people are putting stuff in there that's not supposed to be in there?
That certainly isn't helping. That's a huge problem. So Zoom bombing, as you mentioned, the best example I've heard is a school board meeting where someone showed up. You know, it was an open school board meeting. They publicized it publicly on their Facebook page, and anyone could join. And then suddenly some people showed up and started taking over the screen and putting up pornography and swastikas and stuff. And it's really frustrating, right? Like, we're in the middle of a crisis, and people are using this to be jerks to each other, and it's just not fun. But for the Senate, part of the concern as well is actually over trusting communication. We at CNET actually reported over the last couple of days, we found out that some of the recordings that you make on Zoom, I don't know if you knew you could record your sessions on Zoom, that they are not being protected correctly if you don't have a password. So there's a lot of concerns that are showing up about how Zoom works, and we're starting to see more and more companies switch away from it. I actually profiled a hospital that chose to use Microsoft's Teams instead of Zoom. Teams is a competitor, because it is able to follow medical privacy laws, among other things. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how Zoom responds to all this.
They had no idea what was coming, good and bad. And then, speaking of no idea this was coming, Joe Exotic's Tiger King songs are a big hit on Spotify. That ridiculous Joe Exotic on the hit Tiger King not only collects big cats, but he also sings and has CDs out. I guess people are downloading the music?
Yeah, so if you're not a fan of the Tiger King, I'm sorry that you've missed out on one of the biggest social moments of the last couple months. But yeah, so this guy who is now in jail, sorry, hashtag spoiler, he's also a singer, and he actually created a number of songs, including one of them called I Saw a Tiger. We have a link to the song on CNET if you want. It's really interesting as this documentary has exploded in popularity and really become a cultural touchstone. His songs on Spotify have just gone through the roof. And now there is a little bit that feels a little weird about it because he actually gets a cut of the song, right? Like if they play an ad and stuff, they pay him a little. So it's a little weird to me, this whole thing, considering that a lot of people would say he was torturing these animals. But there you go, and a lot of people are listening to him.
Tell them that the tiger needs a little bit of love.
Wow.
I mean, I think he would have been much better as a professional singer than a tiger keeper.
Well, personally. I'm sure the Tigers would agree with that, and I do too, by the way. One last lighthearted note. We're not getting any emoji in 2021?
Unfortunately not, no. You know, the emoji, there's actually a consortium that puts all this stuff together and figures out what the new emoji will be. So, for example, there were tamales and fondue. They're always adding stuff. And what's interesting is a lot of these emoji are often meant to be as useful to everyone around the world as possible. So they tend to be very generic, right? Stuff like a human heart or a rock or a green bell pepper. So this year they said, look, you know, we're overwhelmed by all the things going on. And at this moment, we're going to kind of push out the release date to kind of let ourselves kind of breathe a little bit and figure things out. And I think that makes sense. I think you're going to see a lot of companies and a lot of groups kind of just calm down and not do much over the next 6 months while we're focused on fighting this virus. And that makes a lot of sense.
I could see a little red dot, though, with the tentacles sticking out. You know, the virus, that's such a ubiquitous image these days. Do you think they would have pushed one out because the planet is sure focused? If ever there was a need for an emoji, you know, not comically, but just as shorthand, that would be it. But not even that, huh?
No, I think most people are sticking to the vomiting emoji for if you're feeling sick. I think that it's actually surprising how much work goes into making these things happen. I wrote a story on CNET a while back about what it takes to create emoji and how it gets them all standardized and all the phones using them. It's actually really tough. So while I support your idea of getting a virus emoji, and I'll definitely lobby them for that, I think it's going to be a little while.
Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET News. Always interesting, Ian. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
1235 WGN Radio. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Dale Buss joins us now, contributing editor of Chief Executive Magazine, a contributor to Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. You've probably read him there before, too. He's done special assignments for my show, in fact, when we asked him to look into the automotive industry and how they were able to transition into developing respirators. Dale, welcome back. How are you today?
Thanks. Hanging in there, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I trust that you are well, and we're reading some of the reporting here. Let's start with this one. The president is turning to CEOs for recovery panels. The other day at his coronavirus press briefing, he spent considerable time doing virtual shout-outs to CEOs and companies. Who is he tapping? How is that working, and how will that help?
Well, he's got, and he's put out a list of about 200 people, CEOs, you know, most of them very prominent, household names of CEOs, you know, people like Tim Cook of Apple, Oscar Munoz of United Airlines. He tapped each one of the automotive CEOs of companies based here, including Elon Musk. He's got a half a dozen big names from finance on his banking committee, people like Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase and Brian Moynihan, Bank of America. And he's also got some labor leaders. He's got a bunch of sports company owners and people like Robert Kraft, his old buddy of the New England Patriots.
Yeah, right.
But then he's also got people like Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, who never has been a fan of the president. And what he's kind of charged these people with doing is trying to help him fulfill his goal of reopening the U.S. economy. It sounds like he hasn't told them, say, give me a plan for how to do it by May 1st, but he has said, help me figure out how to get this going as quickly as possible and of course, safely.
Well, it doesn't sound like a bad idea. It sounds, what I'm trying to figure out is that a functional unit, or is that just cheerleading, which isn't a bad thing necessarily? The president says he's a cheerleader, but is he just championing these people, or is there really some mechanism for them to come together with a sort of bullet point plan for us?
I think it goes beyond sort of tokenism or just kind of cheerleading, because who else is the leader of the free world going to turn to when he's trying to decide how to revive American business? I mean, certainly he's got advisors, and there are people who've been longtime advisors like Steve Moore, who he had nominated for the Fed, who didn't get the job out of politics. You know, you see him on Fox News all the time saying, we need to do this, we need to do that.
Right.
He's on the panel. But you got to go beyond these pundits and so-called experts and get to the people who really press the levers of the economy. and also are closest to, you know, what are things that their own workers are thinking and feeling. What capabilities do they have? I mean, I don't think it's just window dressing. These are the people who need to push the buttons to actually get things going. So why not talk to them, get their advice, and get them to tell him what it is that they need in order to do what we would all like them to do.
Well, I'm encouraged to hear that, and I hope this doesn't sound naive. It's not in the business's best interest to open the economy up too soon if everybody gets sick and then we go into a second tailspin. Probably better to wait a little longer now than have to repeat the whole thing all over, right?
Well, I think that's right, and I think you can already, there's already evidence that some of these leaders are telling the president exactly that. And, I mean, he's been hearing that message for a while, obviously, but you know, Mark Cuban did an interview this morning where he said, you know, it right now we got to most worry about that in between period between now and when the virus is clearly beaten, so that we don't foster some kind of resurgence by trying to reopen the economy too quickly. And he's hearing that from a lot of people, and I think that that's going to give him great pause, because when the CEOs are saying that, the people whose companies are just bleeding and their employees are suffering because of this, when they're telling him about their concern about caution so that there isn't a resurgence, I think that's really going to weigh heavily on him. And I think probably one of the things he's saying to them is, okay, but I want to hear what you guys are going to do to get this economy revved up quickly, you know, once we're past that point of caution that everybody thinks we need to wait to. I think he's really going to be pushing them, as he has over the last 4 years. You know, what are you going to do about it? And I think that'll be very valuable, and I think that the CEOs are going to you know, be forthcoming with plans.
Yeah, I wonder what that means, too. I mean, every CEO would like to see his company be profitable. I presume lower prices or financing options, things to encourage people to buy their products and services, right?
Yeah, I think that's what companies already have been doing, you know, simply for pure self-survival. But I think it's going to be things like, he's got dozens of manufacturers on this panel. I think he's going to press them and say, what are you going to do to try to ensure that maybe you're less reliant on China as a manufacturing site? What are you going to do to bring American manufacturing back to America? Or, you know, how are you going to maybe change your business model a little bit to make, let's say, General Motors, maybe you guys can keep making ventilators for the foreseeable future in that one plant in Indiana,
right?
Even as you get your car making capabilities.
Well, I think that message needs to be delivered, if I may.
I think there's going to be a lot of give and take. I the way that Donald Trump generally feels about CEOs, that he has a very close love-hate relationship with them, I don't think it's just going to be tokenism. I think there's going to be a lot of genuine back and forth that will help shape the way we try to recover from this.
Well, if they want businesses to be less reliant on China, then that means us consumers need to be willing to pay for American-made products, too. It's the Walmart thing all over again. We can be mad about that, but we love those prices. Dale Buss is a contributing editor of Chief Executive Magazine. He's also a contributor to Forbes and Wall Street Journal. Helps us out here. Nice to talk to you. Let's visit again soon. Thanks for your time today, Dale. That's Dale Buss. It's 12:41, almost 42 now. It's time for our Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Crane says United Airlines is taking $5 billion in federal funds to avoid layoffs through September. Its business has plummeted more than 90%. Even with the money, the airline says layoffs will likely come when the money runs out. Metra's ridership is projected to be down 97% this month. The chief financial officer says it could take anywhere from 1 to 3 years to get back to just last year's ridership levels. And the University of Illinois system expects to lose an estimated $158 million by June because of the virus outbreak. Last week, the system's president joined the presidents of 8 other public state universities in a letter to the state's congressional delegation asking the federal government for more help. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Bertrand's watching the market numbers.
Currently, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 117 points, but the NASDAQ is up 72. The S&P 500 up a couple.
All right, back to Orion Samuelson. What are you looking at, O?
Looking at a couple of stories out of Washington, D.C., the Trump administration plans to buy milk and meat from U.S. farmers as part of an initial $15.5 billion effort to help them weather the impact of the pandemic. The decision comes amid rising pressure from the U.S. farm lobby for government purchases as growers and ranchers struggle to get their goods to market because of the disruptions caused by the pandemic, forcing some of them to throw out their supplies, to dump milk, to take the produce that's spoiling out of the marketplace and try to get some money back in the pockets of farmers who are now planning the spring planting season. And I get the feeling I'm going to be spending a fair amount of time talking about cancellations. The one I add today to the list, the Wisconsin FFA convention, normally takes place middle of June, has been postponed. I don't think they've canceled it yet, but I'm still waiting for word on that. But it will not take place as scheduled in early June. And speaking of early June, for 78 years, the village of Harvard, Illinois, has saluted the dairy industry that used to predominate the agricultural production in McHenry County, which provided much of the milk for the Chicago market. And so they normally, the first weekend of June Dairy Month, have a big three-day party in Harvard, Illinois to salute the dairy industry. Well, that's been postponed. It won't happen the first weekend of June this year. It will be scheduled, it is scheduled for October 16, 17, and 18. That's the Harvard Milk Day celebration. And I have the feeling there'll be a lot more state FFA conventions and other activities. We could get into the county and state fair season with cancellations because of COVID-19. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Now it's 12:48. This is WGN. And as always, Amy Guth, business reporter, joins us with still more stories on the business front. That means the COVID front on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy. Welcome again.
Thanks, John. So many things going on today. Thursday is always proving to be such a big day, of course, during the week, because that is when jobless numbers have come out, and we have seen a big spike there. 5.2 million people added, making a total of 22 million unemployment claims, which is a really, really startling number.
Yeah, 5.2 is startling, and yet less than the last one, right? That was over 6 million, was it not?
That's right. There's some comparisons that are being made of like how that compares to the total net jobs gained during the last recession and things like that. You know, I think one thing to keep in mind about the 5.2 number added this week is a couple of things happened this week. That is, some people that have been trying to apply for quite a while, but there was such a backlog of applications, they're finally going through. That's, of course, some new rounds of layoffs, because one thing we started seeing this week was we saw some of the first hit industries like restaurant workers and things like that. This week is where we really started to see a lot of white collar workers starting to get hit with mass layoffs. So we're seeing a lot of, quite a lot reflected in that number this week.
You have been spending some time following the airline industry. I noticed you were looking at what United is doing and the industry in general. What are you seeing about that?
Certainly. And, you know, I think Boeing follows a big part of that. And that's a story I've been following a lot over the last year. Excuse me. But the airlines are looking at a loss of 2020 ticket sales of $314 billion, speaking of staggering numbers. And that's about 25% more than they expected. And a number that big, the significance of that is, with numbers that big, the hope for any kind of V-shaped recovery, meaning maybe it'll hit bottom, but it'll bounce up really fast, the bigger that number is, the harder that V-shaped recovery is to obtain. And so airlines are thinking they're estimating they may burn through about $61 billion in cash in Q2. Of course, here in Chicago, we look at United a lot because that's local. They have received $5 billion, they've announced today, in federal aid. $3.5 billion of that is a grant, and $1.5 billion is a low-interest loan. Primarily, that's going to be about payroll and benefits for workers. And part of that is 4.6 million shares of stock that will be issued, an issue warrant will go for towards the federal government. So anytime we see, you know, I think from the start we've been seeing, we've been having a lot of conversations about, well, what does this mean for airline workers? When, once you see CEOs and executive leadership teams start to take pay cuts, things like that, you always know there's probably a big round of layoffs coming, but hopefully $5 billion will hopefully go a long way to cover them. They believe this number will get them through the second quarter and into part of that third, maybe even into the fourth quarter.
There was a conversation on our station this morning with Bob Surratt, and they were talking about how the payroll protection plan isn't perfect for the restaurant industry because the idea is that you have to then pay your employees with that money, a high percentage of it. I think it's 75 or 80%, right? The problem is they can't. They literally don't have tables for people to wait on. So it's not a perfect program for them. What are you hearing about the restaurant business in general?
Well, the restaurant business has a little bit of good news today. And so citywide, the March restaurant tax has been delayed again. There was already one delay. It's been delayed again, this time to May 31st, which I think is a big sigh of relief for a lot of people in the restaurant industry when we're talking about sales being down 70% citywide for bars and restaurants. With that also comes hotel accommodation tax, parking and amusement tax, also pushed back to May 30th. So there's, you know, in a moment with not a lot of good news for the restaurant and bar industry, there is a little bit of relief that will hopefully keep more small restaurants going a little bit longer.
What are you seeing or hearing about the stimulus checks? That's just the direct payments to all of us. My phone lines light up unsolicited every morning with people wondering when they're going to get theirs or what the program is doing.
That's right. I think that's a big question on a lot of people's minds right now. So a lot of people did start reporting they got a direct deposit yesterday. So if you paid taxes in 2018 or 2019, if you filed a return and you got a refund that was a direct deposit, you might have seen a check yesterday hit your bank. If you didn't, though, don't panic. There's a way to find out. If you Google, there's a great tool. You can just Google, you know, IRS payment tool. Make sure that's an IRS.gov site. There's a couple of fraudulent sites. Anytime there's money involved, of course, there's smart people on both sides of the law. So you can just Google that Get My Payment tool, and you can see exactly what that is. If for some reason maybe you don't file a tax return or if there's any kind of issue, you can see exactly the status of that. So what is, if you get your check mailed, it's going to take a little longer. The Treasury reports it might even take a couple of months to get everybody's paper check out who didn't have direct deposit. Because really, if you think about it, it makes sense that essentially if you didn't get a tax refund in the past, your banking information is just not on file. So you'll have to wait for that paper check.
Incidentally, Terry Savage was on yesterday talking a little bit about that. If you go to terrysavage.com, terrysavage.com, upper right-hand corner, she has a link to that IRS program where you can find out what the status of your check is. And if you don't have a bank account or routing number, or you want to change it, you can go there and insert a bank account and routing number. And then instead of a paycheck, a paper check, they'll literally deposit it in that account. You'll get it quicker if you do that. And if you're worried about, well, what's the legit site and what's not, Terry's link is certainly directly to the legitimate place. Here's another headline. 22 million Americans have filed for unemployment and the lending programs have run out of funds. Is that right?
That is right. So that's not for the unemployment part. That's the small business part. That's really frustrating to a lot of people when we're talking about this big a number of people unemployed, a lot of small businesses trying to protect paychecks. So this is part of the $349 billion federal relief program for small businesses. That fund has run out. And so it doesn't mean $349 billion has been granted or dispersed, because some part of that does go to fees and processing and administrating of that. But such a large number has already, I mean, this started April 3rd. So essentially, you know, in 2 weeks, not even, that fund has run out. There's pressure to re-up that and refund that because there's so many people still waiting, so many small businesses still waiting for that. Now, if you have a small business and you've already applied, that doesn't mean you're not getting it. If you've already been approved, that number is being counted in this fund having, you know, being accounted for. But if you haven't yet put in an application or you're still waiting, it's not looking good. So a lot of lenders are frustrated. A lot of small business owners are really, really frustrated by that news. And, you know, Congress is pretty much deadlocked on over refunding that. So that's kind of the next thing we have to wait to hear about.
Yeah, you want them to hustle on that. Our Dave Plyer, who hosts a Sunday morning Sinatra show, 7 to 9:30 a.m., very popular Sinatra music on WGN Radio Sunday mornings, is himself an independent businessman. Dave's on line one right now. Dave, you applied for that loan, is that right?
Yeah, we did. We did really from the onset when the program first began. And not only did we get approved, but we were funded this morning for the loan. So it moved very quickly. But from what I hear from other small business owners in our community is that it really depended on the bank that you were working with. And we were working with and with our sponsor, actually, Wintrust, on this, who is our banker. And they were just, they took care of their customers first.
Right.
They made that a priority, which was important. But they walked us through every step of the way and just have been fabulous. And again, we applied, we were approved, and we were funded this morning.
Well, then I guess the moral of this story is it does work. You got to be quick, and the money has to be there, and you have to have a relationship with your bank. You had a good relationship with Wintrust. I'm glad to hear that. We're out of time, guys, but Amy, I guess the point is, if it works that well, we need to get more money in the system.
I think that's about right. Yep, I think you have it.
Yeah. Hey, glad to hear it, Dave. By the way, you can tell I get up after 6:30, Dave. You start at 6:30 Sunday mornings, right?
6:30 Sunday mornings and then Fridays at 11, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Thank you both for joining us. Let's all stay in touch.